The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome, dear listeners, to Season 15, Episode 22. I'm your host, Otis Gyre, and in this episode, I'll be performing three tales to terrify you, courtesy of authors Kyle Harrison, Dale Thompson, and James Thirlwell. Tonight, we'll hear stories of pernicious puzzles, hellish headsets, and wicked websites. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first two spine-tingling stories. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So, lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. The Internet. An endless wealth of knowledge and information. And its most important invention, the cat video. Yes, we all love the cute and cuddly things that spring forth endlessly. But what it also becomes is the home of any urban legend you can conceive. From dangerous webcam experiences to places you should never buy things, to stories about alternates, the World Wide Web is a wild place. And tonight, we celebrate that oddity by showcasing some fine stories for you that remind you that sometimes you just can't hide behind a video screen. We kick off our first tale from Kyle Harrison of one of those types of interactive games that are oh so popular. Shame, then, that this one seems to take itself a lot more seriously than most. Deadly serious. Without further ado, I present to you Mr. Riddle's Dark Web Challenge. Has anyone tried to finish Mr. Riddle's Dark Web Challenge? I'm a sucker for puzzles. Give me a good old brain teaser and I will likely think about it all day. Sometimes I even go to bed thinking about it so my subconscious can figure the problem out. Call it a hobby or an obsession, but I guess being stuck at home more has given me a chance to go down a few internet rabbit holes and get hooked on stuff. One of my favorite pastimes is new ARGs, or alternate reality games, if you haven't heard the term before. I've found Twitter to be a breeding ground for these types of games. Typically, they involve a set pattern with regular updates, interesting tidbits of world building, etc. Eventually, they're solved and the account's closed. When I found the account for Mr. Riddles, I knew that it was different. It only showed up on my Reddit feed about a month ago. A brand new account was posting and encouraging as many new members as possible to follow them on Twitter. I'd seen many similar ARGs do the same thing, but after going to their Twitter, I saw the intriguing artwork of who I guessed was Mr. Riddles, and I was impressed. The creators were taking their time with this creation. The first puzzle wasn't even a puzzle. It was just a rhyme with a few emojis. All of those commenting on the initial puzzle were replying with the skull emoji over and over. Day two was a little different. The account came out with a list of names with numbers alongside them. Sam 1, Robert 4, Felicia 13, and so on, all the way up to the number 30. I was surprised to find that my name was placed alongside the number 17. All I'd done was like the tweet. I hadn't commented or expressed an interest in being involved, but now, apparently, I was registered for some kind of contest, and the first challenge was about to begin. I was sent a link to what looked like a typical dark web forum. The rules seemed pretty straightforward. Every day, a new challenge would appear on the Twitter feed, and people would try their damnedest to guess. Often, no one could get the right answer. By the end of the day, there was an announcement that someone from the list was eliminated. I think there's only one winner at the end, and the way things are going with these puzzles, it won't be me, one user wrote. Later that same day, a few of us who were hooked on the idea of this bizarre, unsolvable puzzle decided to make a Discord server and start putting our heads together. Hey, the rules didn't say we can't work together, am I right? John, one of the initial mods of the server, said. It sounded like a good idea, but then the next day, he was eliminated. The Discord was shut down shortly after. Not because John deleted it, though. Like everything else, it was frozen. None of the channels worked. Another user reported when they tried to DM John's account, he would just reply with gibberish, like a bot had hacked him or the dark website had infected his PC with a malware virus. Or, some suggested, maybe he had really gone insane. Some began to speculate that John must have been a plant. That's someone who involves themselves in the ARG and pretends to be a player, but is actually part of the production behind the scenes to make it more believable. It's also a brilliant tactic to make everyone involved in the game suspicious of each other. Divide and conquer. So when John disappeared, we all just assumed it was just another part of the game. And that changed a few days later when someone heard a news article on the dark web feed. It was a murder in a nearby Tri-County area. But what was really eye-catching was that it said the person died playing an online scavenger hunt. I clicked on it and read in gruesome details how the person had become convinced their sibling had a clue to the puzzle sewed onto their body. A transcript of their confession said that it was because they couldn't stop playing the game. I didn't want to hurt anyone, the young man claimed, but the game had made him do it. And when further prompted to ask what the game was all about, the boy repeatedly cut himself, spelling out the name in his blood. Riddles. 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 Police were baffled. The small community of players in the challenge were stunned. Was it possible this game was killing people? Maybe it's like the Blue Whale Challenge, and it comes to the point that the game convinces people to kill themselves, one user told me during a conversation. It wasn't unheard of, but we both rationalized that it had to be that the game was only affecting mentally ill people in this negative way. Comes with the territory of ARG, I guess, I replied. Sounds lame to say, but it wasn't unheard of. I don't know, man. Something about this feels different. Like, have you gotten one of the cards yet? I told him I didn't know what he was talking about, and he showed me what appeared to be a shuffled picture. Putting it together revealed a picture of one of the major arcana of the tarot, specifically one for death. When'd you get this? I asked inquisitively. Just yesterday. They sent it when I solved the daily puzzle on the website. I checked it and didn't see the puzzle at all. Strange as it sounds, I couldn't even remember the puzzle from the day before. Maybe I'd missed it? Or perhaps it had been private. Some contests did that. Sure, it made sense, I told myself. But I still shrugged it off. They likely are going for the horror angle just to try and scare you, I said. My friend didn't believe me, insisting that the card had been pulled related directly to their life. Let me ask you something. Did you ever actually give the contest your name? He asked. It made me uneasy when I realized they hadn't either. Was someone doxing us? Trying to gain information on our personal life without us realizing it? Their concern grew over the few days that passed as they began receiving odd messages from the person in charge of the Twitter account. These riddles are bothering me, man. It's like I feel I'm constantly being watched. Somehow, they always relate to whatever I'm doing. It's really weird. I got a friend who works in cybersecurity. Let me see if I can figure out who's running the show. In the meantime, just report it to Twitter. I retorted, wondering if the game was beginning to take a toll on my friend's sanity. We didn't know each other, IRL, and given that the game was becoming more difficult by the day, it felt like we needed to rely on each other now more than ever for a good outcome. I even tried to suggest that they take it easy and take a break, but they didn't listen. I understood because I was too invested to quit either. The next day, I got my own unique puzzle. This one was a cipher. For the life of me, I couldn't figure it out. No clues to discover what the keyword was. Nothing even remotely connected. I started putting in random combinations, like my last name, my father's last name, anything. It wasn't working. Then I researched and looked up the ancestral name of my family and put it in, too. To my surprise, it gave me a result. The word was cursed. I'm not sure why, but as I saw that cipher make sense to me, I got this sinking feeling in my chest. I felt like I was being watched. I tried to contact my friends to tell them that I was starting to grow concerned about this game, but they didn't respond. Their Twitter had been deactivated. Erased. I went to Reddit next to see if I could glean any further information on the account connected to Mr. Riddles. There was still just that one singular post from a month ago. The only connection I now had was the dark web. Maybe I was still overthinking it, but part of me was becoming convinced that this was not an ordinary game. For one thing, instead of posting a daily puzzle on Twitter like before, the website started to DM me, just like it had done to John. It was showing me disturbing images of gore and violence, each one more graphic than the rest. It was all these red flags telling me that I should just turn away. For some reason, though, I kept looking to determine what the clues meant. I was convinced that it was another puzzle masquerading as something else. A taunting DM unexpectedly revealed an important clue. Find your friend and you'll find the rest. Did it mean the one I'd been talking to online? It occurred to me they'd gone silent for a few days, and I hadn't realized. I scrambled the pictures faster this time, using his name as the answer. It revealed five other names. I didn't recognize any of them. Searching them on Google, I discovered that all were dead or missing. What was this game? I shuddered as I went to bed, trying to close my eyes and not think about Mr. Riddles. Those haunting deep eyes had had no face. The dark madness that had swirled back and forth amid his aura. It was a devil, come to take human flesh and tear us limb from limb. His clothes were a patchwork of colors, sewn together and worn out over time. A long brown leather coat draped over most of his figure, and his shaggy hair covered his face. Two yellow eyes gently opened and closed in the shadows of where his face should be, but nothing else could be seen. His hands were gloved, and his feet covered by oversized boots. There was a ragged cane leaning beside him that had bite marks up and down. And as he spoke, he grabbed the cane and leaned up a bit once we noticed him. He came to play and thought you were done. But when you stop, then I get to have my fun. And he made this strange laugh that I can never forget. It was bizarre and echoed through my head. He reached for me and told me a secret. The game can't be won except by me. Give up, and you'll be free. He then cut me right across my chest with his fingernails. I screamed at the top of my lungs and jumped out of bed. Ripping my shirt apart, I looked down at my chest to find that it was, in fact, bleeding. I rushed out of bed into the washroom, scrambling to get some water on my face. The water got scalding hot and I had to pull my hands back. The room got hotter and hotter, steam billowing, and spooky letters forming on the other side of the mirror. In the shadows behind me was the form of Mr. Riddles. "We're not done till I say. You'll have no choice but to play." As I turned to confront the apparition, my bathroom seemed quiet and lonely. Just me and my paranoid mind losing sleep over some stupid game, I told myself as I reasoned that the wound had been self-inflicted. There's no such thing as a digital ghost, or even a real one. I just needed sleep. As I laid back down, I heard the laugh again. It kept rattling in my head as I struggled to go to sleep. I don't think it stopped until the next day when I reluctantly got online and responded to one of the puzzles. There were three choices. It felt like none of them could be correct. I just needed my brain to catch a break and shut down for a little bit. But that didn't happen. The second I solved the puzzle, someone sent me another. And then another. I shut off my phone and determined that I had spent way too much time on this internet rabbit hole. I wasn't going to let Mr. Riddle's game control me anymore. Or so I thought. That day at work during lunch, one of my co-workers was doing the daily jumble. "It's harder than usual," he said, showing it to me. I was studying the drawing, though. It was a white rabbit with the number 17 on it, the same number that I pulled as a participant for the contest. "How in the hell? Can I see that for a second?" I asked nervously, taking the paper away and staring hard at the mysterious picture. The rabbit was talking to someone who was hanging upside down, and the caption read, "How do we decide who wins now?" followed by two blanks. I immediately started to unscrabble the words. Each one was more disturbing than the last. Then a clear answer began to form. "Everyone loses." I crumpled up the paper and tossed it away. My co-workers thought I'd lost my mind, and maybe I had. This game was controlling my life, and I couldn't even escape it if I tried. Was it really driving me mad? I started to hallucinate. Mr. Riddles was around every corner constantly taunting me to play a game. It felt like each time I'd try to ignore him, things got worse. But I tried as hard as I could to stop the game from going further. First, it was only hurting me. My stomach would constantly ache, or I'd get a severe headache. And then, of course, the hallucinations and the nightmares continued. Mr. Riddles was everywhere I was. Was I the only contestant left and now he was haunting me? Sometimes I would hear this nightmarish song hum in my head. It was like something out of a haunted carnival. Dissonant organ music mixed with vaudevillian strings. Hey, diddly-doo. I have some riddles for you. Who's big and mean, but not quite green? Hey, diddly-doo. I know the answer to you. Hey, diddle-diddle. Can you solve my riddle? Who's watching when you lie and snickering when you cry? Come, play the game. You'll never be the same. Hey, diddle-diddles, why don't you come meet Mr. Riddles? He'll keep you busy from 5 to 3 and never leave your company. He's the friend you never had and the one that always does bad. You say you don't want to play? You'd rather be good and stay away? Then don't sing this song or else you'll go wrong. Hey, diddly-doo, what's going to happen to you? Hey, diddly diddles, come and play with Mr. Riddles. It disturbed me each time the tune rattled through my head. What did it mean? Was I doomed to play this game forever? Was there no way out? The account in the dark web showed differently. Still, people struggled to figure it out. I wasn't alone. But was it all an illusion? Were any of these people real? A few days ago, right before the finale contest announcement, I received a disturbing call from my buddy in cybersecurity. I couldn't find a singular IP address for the Twitter account or anything. It's randomly jumping around, showing locations all around the globe. It's not tied to one place. He cleared his throat. It's a sophisticated artificial intelligence, that's for sure. That deep, hollow feeling in my chest was returning. I was fighting a force beyond understanding, and anyone who was even getting close to discovering the truth was being eliminated. I got a DM that same day. You're all that's left. What luck? Tomorrow we'll see whether or not you really suck. July 30th, yesterday. The final puzzle. I was sure if I could solve this one, Mr. Riddles would release me from his infernal grasp and return my sanity. I was expecting something complicated, but what I got was much more than that, an enigma. In case you aren't familiar with them, enigma puzzles were codes designed by the Germans during World War II. It took Britain nearly to the end of the war to solve some of the encryptions because of how difficult they were. There were so many varieties that some have been considered to be the most challenging test of mental strength ever known to man. This is what Mr. Riddles was taunting me with, challenging me to finish a puzzle that had stumped much smarter men than me. There were scrambled messages I couldn't make heads or tail of. Like so many other ciphers, I needed a keyword. I had no idea what it might be or how many rotations to go in the decrypting machine. During the war, a brilliant scientist managed to find a way to decrypt them, which ran through all different combinations of ciphers. It was mind-numbing and time-consuming. I didn't want to do that, especially since the puzzle also came with a countdown. Only 24 hours to figure out the final solution. I could hear his supernatural laugh taunting me. I was going to wind up going insane just like the rest. Hour by hour passed by, and I tried desperately to stop thinking about the game, but I couldn't. The farther away I tried to push it, the worse my luck got. I wasn't even sure that there was a viable solution. Then I realized there was only 1 hour left. Mr. Riddles himself showed his face on the screen. I saw his ghastly figure standing and waiting for me to fail, laughing with glee. Why don't you just lose? Maybe that was the answer. to give up. I couldn't see any other way. This is where you come in. There's one final part to this puzzle, and unfortunately, this sick, twisted puzzle involves you as well. The tests of mental acuity I was forced to participate in are now headed to all of you out there. All of them ready to be solved. If you solve them, you'll learn your role in all of this, and ultimately your fate. You'll be another cog in this game that doesn't end. But be warned. Mr. Riddles is impatiently waiting. There are no winners, only losers. And he will find you if you choose not to play. It's too late now. You can't escape. Choose carefully before the countdown begins. Beware of what curiosity can do. Hope you enjoyed Mr. Riddle's Dark Web Challenge by Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented featured author, well, you can help support him by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/Kyle-Harrison. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/Kyle-Harrison. Thanks again for your support of this program and tonight's featured author. Please, please, when the game stops being fun, it's time to take a step back and re-examine your life. Unless it turns out the game is playing you, then I suppose you're kind of screwed. Dale Thompson comes next, with a story about a mysterious computer store, free merchandise, and a virtual trip that's, too real for comfort. Guess some hobbies are not for everybody. Without further ado, I present to you, Run Like There's No Tomorrow. Let me start by saying that I'm unsure how much truth I want to let you know. Maybe I should not share anything. That's probably somewhat fetuous, and I usually wince at some juvenile behavior. Yet I feel the need to say something regardless of whether it paints the complete picture or not. My life has been expressively lyrical, with emotion being poured out like water, and imagination running free and wild. On the other hand, like many of you, things go on inside my head that never spill out into the world around me. I believe that being sensitive and caring with a dose of empathy and reading the signs clearly and correctly allows us time to process before we blunder in and put our foot in our mouth or we insult or demean someone unintentionally. I've never wanted to be an arch-weaver of tapestried terror in anyone's life, and that's probably why I'm where I am today. I've lived my life with much spice, pungent at times, but some people understand bold flavors and have a more discerning palate than others. I am, of course, speaking metaphorically. Some things should be left unsaid. Some mysteries should never be solved, and some secrets should never be spoken. I'm putting myself in a compromising position because I doubt whether it will be possible to tell this story without making myself vulnerable. Because I believe this may be the last tale I will be telling. What harm can the truth actually do? They say the truth will set you free. What's being free? I have never been free. I've always been bound to something, or something has been bound to me. I have dragged a chain that has held me back since the day I was born. Now the terrible reality of it all has come crashing down, and I think I should crucify the players in this game called life. What is life but being born, living, or not having a life, then dying? Is honesty really the best policy? My honesty is not a celebration. I would better describe it as a mournful dirge. Yes, that's it. A requiem to lament the dead. So, if you want the truth and desire my honesty, I present to you a hymn of regret, coupled with weeping and wailing, to commiserate the life I almost had. It all began with a puff of wind in my face, which caused me to turn my head slightly to see a computer store with the strangest sign posted. The sign read, "The denizens of cyberspace awaits you." Beneath the sign in some small letters were other familiar words. Data superhighway, internet, world wide web, global village, information server, social media, hyperspace, and several more details that I didn't bother to read. I was intrigued by the word denizens. After all, the word denizen, to me, sounded like habitations or residency. I entered this computer megastore that I had not previously known existed. Out of nowhere came a high-pressure salesperson, a woman, Asian, who talked faster than I could compute, but what I was able to store was, "Welcome to Otherworldly Cyberworld. Our goal is to give you the experience of a lifetime, to transport you from the tangible into the impossible, and within the impossible, you can build whatever life you so choose." I was so unaware what that even meant, but out of politeness, I said, "Sure, sign me up." "You've made an excellent choice," she communicated, and then paused for me to tell her my name. Oh, yes, of course, I'm Howard Tillman," I introduced myself dumbly. I followed this woman to the counter. She reached under the counter and produced a box, a sealed box, in plastic. It looked like the size of an old VHS tape. "Inside this box is a brand new life, the road to serendipity. You simply plug this small machine into your USB port, place the hands-free glasses on, and follow the instructions. You'll be transported to your own kingdom. The experience lasts as long as you'd like it for, but once you remove the glasses, the experience ends." At the time, I was not actually looking for any sort of experience, but the pitch she gave me sure sounded intriguing, and I was not doing anything any better with my day. My life at that point had been disastrous, to say the least, so a distraction might have been the remedy to get me out of my slump. Now came the question of cost. "How much is it?" The Asian lady smiled kindly and answered, "This is a trial study. It's free for you. No cost, no obligation. We simply ask you to visit the website when you've concluded your experience and answer a few questions about the simulation." I thought, fair enough. Easy peasy. She swiftly placed the box with the item into a bag and hurriedly showed me straight to the door as if the store was closing. I looked around and saw no other customers, just myself, so I assumed it was possible they were locking up, even though it was in the middle of the day. I brushed away dwelling any more about store hours and proceeded home to check out this gift I'd been handed. I will admit, I was somewhat irresolute about proceeding. On the way home, I considered how odd and strange it was to be handed something free without even asking for it. Yeah, the whole scenario seemed dodgy, but what harm could there be? Once, safely home and comfortable in my swivel desk chair, I opened the box that had been given to me by Otherworldly Cyberworld. Inside was a pair of snazzy dark glasses and a small mechanism the size of a cigarette pack. It came with a USB cable, but no instructions on how to use the device. I opened my computer screen, plugged the USB cable into my computer, and made sure that the connection to the device was secure. I saw no switch to turn it on or to activate it. Unexpectedly, my computer screen went dark and the words appeared, "Place on supplied glasses." "Easy enough," I said out loud. Once the glasses were secured, a virtual screen appeared with the words, "Thank you for your participation. Have a great experience." With that, the glasses went dark. I sat for a few moments, waiting for something else to happen, but when nothing did, I removed the glasses to see that my computer was off. I checked the cable to make sure that the power supply had not become unplugged. It was positively plugged in, but the computer would not reboot. I thought, disappointingly, that whatever this device was that I took a chance on had fried my computer somehow. I became angry enough to punch a hole in the wall, but instead, I went to the garage to find another power supply. My hope was that it was only the power supply and I could get the computer up and running again. Finding a spare, I returned to the computer, disconnected the free device, and tossed it aside. I replaced my power supply and pressed the computer on button. Often it would take time to reboot, but this time it lit up the second I pushed the start button. I placed the free virtual device back into the box along with the sunglasses and made a mental note to return the thing tomorrow and file a complaint concerning its faulty design. At least my computer had not been sizzled with this stupid thing. My computer screen flashed like a strobe, as if 100 bright lamps were intermittently flashing in my eyes. An infernal chilblain numbed my feet and hands, as if I had just dropped them into ice water. My condition worsened with the addition of an unpleasant feeling of dread, increasing my distress to unhealthy levels. Whatever I had become stricken with roosted in my head so deeply like a memory I could not recall. It was as the nest of a corpse bird who ate the rotted meat of the dead. I didn't understand what was happening. I shook my head like someone desperate to clear the water from my ears. That is when I heard a loud, amplified voice, as if it were being transmitted directly into my auditory cortex. It was repeating an incomplete sentence. "The keepers of souls." I became confined in an invisible density of forced imprisonment. I struggled for my freedom to wrestle from this hold. Whatever cosmic terror had grabbed me, let me loose, and I made a run for the kitchen. I was in flight or fight mode, acute stress response. I had no weapon to defend myself with, and I saw no enemy, so I ran as if my life depended on it. I hit the back door as if levitating, and I went outside. I had to be free of the house. The world looked different to me, with such extreme dissimilarities that I didn't recognize my surroundings. The world was full of discrepancies. I didn't know where I was at or what was happening to me. The contrast was all too real, all too strange. To compute the variables was impossible. Instead of my green backyard with the pear tree and my white picket fence, there was a balcony up high with a railing. I was elevated above a city in a type of penthouse. Below me, there were flying machines busy going back and forth. I couldn't believe my eyes. I practically crumbled with palsied fear. Even if nothing else was real, my paralysis and the start of slight tremors were all too vivid. I couldn't deal with such a hallucination. This was a ruse, a deception. I'd been drugged, obviously. Surely this will wear off, and I'd be returned to normal any minute. I managed to return to the protection of my home, but it, too, was different from when I retreated just moments before. My head felt inflated like a balloon expanding without measure. The pressure became intense, and as it distended, I used my hands to squeeze the increase of my inflamed skull to make it smaller. found myself lying torpid on the floor as if in some dormant state of hibernation. Colors of amazement flashed before my eyes in a kaleidoscope of prisms and unexploded geometric designs, dazzling my senses without physical harm. I was environed by a stealthy nemesis, but that was not the worst of it. Whatever it was attacking my nervous system, pulling me down even further into an insipid demise. Had no fight, no willpower. The horror of it all was too consuming to fathom. As I started to close my eyes in death, succumbing to the fatal end of my existence, the amplified female voice announced, "You are now complete and ready. The Keeper of Souls program has been successfully installed. You may continue to the next level." What'd that even mean? I looked around, and my house was not what I remembered, unless my house was a computer. On all four walls, I took note of a motherboard, a socket with a plug-in, a framework of crafted circuitry. I crawled across the floor like a sick animal. My head was ill, as if I'd taken a multivitamin on an empty stomach. I was in search of my computer. The only thing that made sense was that this was all connected to that stupid program that was given to me. There was an infernal, constant humming, as if locusts were swarming in my head. I figured it was from all of this unexplained wiring and microprocessing around me. If this was a game, I did not want to play the discreditable thing. I didn't know the rules or even the objective. I wanted out of here, and I wanted out now. That device had to be the nucleus of my delusion. If I could locate the core, I might be able to disconnect it and end this appalling nightmare. It seemed I crawled through corridor after corridor of uncharted catacombs, and the further I crawled, the more deserted I became. After some time, having no idea where I was, because this was no longer where I lived, my head came back around and I was feeling like my old self. I was well enough to stand without the dizziness. I attempted to get to my bearings, yet the endless possibilities on which way to move confounded me to no end. It wasn't until I saw the paranormal happen that I moved, and then I moved quickly. Some of the wiring along the walls began to snap clear and became independent, like tentacles on a giant squid. They literally lunged at me like striking vipers. Of course, this caught me off guard. One actually struck my leg, and that's when I knew that in this distorted reality, I could feel pain. The attack stung like a wasp, and I flinched to avoid a second strike. Whatever I had done to precipitate this, I didn't want to repeat. Instinctively, I made a break for it. It just so happened that I ran into a more expansive area, and queerly, my desk was at the far end of this very large data center. There were other desks strewn throughout the area, no particular order, with people sitting at them wearing oddly shaped helmets that were wired into personal computers. Unable to decide on how to proceed, I opted not to bother any of these people, who were fully engrossed at their desks. I went rapidly to my computer, where I found the same style helmet with connecting wires attached. I took a look over my shoulder at the others, just to get a perspective of what to expect if I were to attach this contraption to my head. I discovered nothing other than they were plugged in and didn't appear to be in any discomfort. I saw no exit out of this room other than the passage I'd already traversed, so I said to myself, "Well, here goes nothing," and I placed the helmet upon my head. Tiny little pinpricks began to snip at my scalp, and my computer screen illuminated with a picture of me sitting at the computer, as if the computer camera was turned toward me. I peered directly into the camera when all of a sudden, and without explanation, the image of me on the screen began to shoot gouts of blood from my eyes onto the keyboard and screen. I reached for my face, but I didn't feel any blood, and when I looked at my hands, they were clean. In vain, I looked for blood, but I was not bleeding. Only the me on the screen was bleeding. I tugged hard on the helmet to remove it, but it was fastened tightly to my head. I took another look over my shoulder, and the others that I had just seen moments before were gone. I was alone, with an excessively rapid heart rate. My patience for this debacle was giving way, and I was about to rip the helmet off with complete disregard for my scalp, when the gruesomeness of this horrific scene dismissed itself without warning, and the helmet dropped off my head to the floor. Cold sweat permeated every pore of my flesh, and I shivered from the lack of warmth and mounting fright. Adopting a new game plan, I convinced myself that if they wanted to kill me, they would have already done so. My idea was to play along, make the most of it, and try not to have a heart attack in the process. A gunmetal-colored door stood where I swore there had been no door before. The humming vibration had not ceased, and it was stronger as I approached the door. I assumed that whatever was behind this door might very well provide me with the answers. There was no door handle, nor doorknob, so I gave it a push, and crazily, it whooshed open like a windstorm, blinding me temporarily, just long enough that in that minute period of time when I was sightless, the door had closed behind me, and I stood on a street that was not of my world. I was in a futuristic city that was so clinically, brilliantly polished that everything appeared to have a buffed-out lacquer applied to it. Every unusually shaped building gleamed and glistened under an artificial light of which I couldn't find the source. The citizens were dressed neatly in one-piece outfits, men and women alike, in silvery sheened garb. I compared my own clothing, and I too was dressed identically. Impossible! This was beyond any ingenuity that I'd ever even heard of. I stopped one of them and I asked him politely, "Where are we?" He warmly answered, "Oh, I see, you are a new arrival. Have you reported in yet?" Dumbfounded, I answered, "No, I have not. Is that necessary?" "Indeed it is. If one doesn't report in, you'll be considered as malware, and the scan team will see you as a virus or infection. If you're not cleaned entirely, you'll be blocked, which is worse than death itself." His voice had a worried tone which unsettled my nerves further. "Can you point me to the direction to report in?" I asked, believing that this was necessary and must be done immediately. "Well, it's just across the street," he pointed. And across the street was a sign as plain as the nose on my face, which read, "Report in here." This was so mind-boggling to process. I thanked the man and made my way across the varnished, shellac-smooth street to this processing center. Thankfully, there was no queue, but there was an unaccountable allure to this place, as if I was supposed to be there. It was not so much tantalizing as it was horrifying. At the counter, behind a thick, impenetrable glass, sat a young woman who appeared to be human, but as I got closer, I observed that she was plugged in. She was an artificial intelligence desk, connected by numerous wires that fed into a computer to her left. "I am reporting in. I was told this was what I was supposed to do." The clerk looked up at me with an expressively real human face and said with some austerity, "Welcome to the Art of Processing. What is your name?" I answered, "Howard Tillman." "Middle name?" she required. "Andrew," I submitted. "Howard Andrew Tillman, you're assigned to bus number 13, which arrives in 5 minutes. The bus will take you to check in with Facility 2 for the second phase of processing." She slid a card with my name on it under the slit at the bottom of the window. I didn't ask any questions, because I assumed she was programmed to only do what she had just done. I collected the identity card, went out front, and stood beneath the sign that read Bus Stop. My mind was upon escape. This imaginary world had to be a creation of my subliminal mind. This could not be a healthy climate for humans, I debated and argued with myself. I assumed that this was a sim-generated game, and that silly device that I agreed to try was now testing me within it somehow. I didn't know the first thing about hacking, but what I needed to do was to hack or hijack this system and free myself. I wondered if this place had a sim manager. Possibly, I could approach them and clearly state that I no longer wished to be part of this experiment, and if they might release me. Because I was not of this original computer-generated program, I believed it should not be that difficult to escape. I needed to avoid further programming, which I believe I had already gone through the first part with that ridiculous helmet. Those are things that I determined should be avoided. As a matter of fact, every time I was obedient to commands, such as showing up to the reporting station and possibly that old keeper of souls that I'd already endured, it brought dissatisfaction and discomfort. This led me to believe that I should not get on the bus. I needed to become the bug, and they would kick me out. Others had to be awake like me in here. Maybe if I could find other like-minded people, we could all make a break for it. But on the other hand, if I was forcibly ejected, what if that meant death? I could end up in some overcrowded refugee camp as well. I had to be smart here. If I created this place in my mind, did that mean that I was on my own? That I was my own saboteur? Had I made myself the victim on purpose? Maybe I knew the possibilities of this augmented reality would be unlimited, and I had a plan going in, but now I couldn't remember because through their programming they erased my original plan. I needed a proper information center where I could tap into the internet. Bus 13 was just pulling up, and from the looks of the passengers, I didn't want to be part of that depressing group. I waved it away and began to take a stroll into the city in search of anything that might provide me with important information concerning my crisis. I would even go for some supernatural intervention at this point. I mean, I've heard of ghosts or apparitions blowing out light bulbs and controlling motorized and electrical equipment before. This was some sort of curse and had no real solutions to resolve it. Everyone around me appeared taciturn and non-communicative with one another, but not one of them, of the innumerable persons passing by, paid any attention to me. I decided to stop the fellow and get some answers. "Excuse me, I'm new here. Do you know how I could find an exit?" The man appeared, cultivated, hopefully with a strong-willed mind. Distinctively, he gave me a look of severe disappointment and answered, "Have you reported in?" I showed him my ID card. "Excellent," he approved. "The only way out of here is a reboot." "A reboot? Is that possible?" I asked. "I have no affiliations with a reboot. I see that you missed your bus. That is going to be a problem," the man warned. "A problem? You'll be targeted," he said, scurrying me up with this troubling information. "You've fallen into the minority of lesser programs, seldom called upon and never used. You're targeted for the recycle bin." Every person on the street stopped walking and every eye focused on me. "I suppose that's a problem," I asked. "An injunction has been issued for you. You must pay restitution or go to the recycled bin," the man said, becoming more robotically controlled by a force neither seen nor heard. "No one will harbor you. You are a lone vessel adrift in a very big sea. You're flagged as a minority. It's my duty to restrain you," the man said diligently, as he reached out to take my wrist. At least my reflexes were still intact. I jerked my arm away and gave the man a hard push, which sent him down on the seat of his pants. This triggered alarms from every direction in some sort of age of darkness where all the lights around us dimmed and glowed a faint red. A voice echoed, reporting, "Fugitive on the loose, masochistic behavior reported." A white camphor mist began to emanate from the vents in the sidewalk. I instantly got a bitter taste in my mouth, which caused me to flee the scene. A couple of people made haphazard attempts to stop me, but I easily knocked them flat as well. It appeared that I had caused a scene in this oddball place, and the freaks were going to try and gas me. Perceived as some sort of threat, self-preservation was all that I was concerned with, since, obviously, I'd become an illegal. The man I was before I became an illegal was no different than the man I was now, except they'd changed my status. I assumed I was guilty of a fray, but I'd been provoked. Who could I plead my case to? I had no clue. Acting entirely tactical now, in a self-serving manner, I was not about to be stopped. I paced myself as I fled so I could read the overwhelming amount of hanging signs pointing to everything imaginable in this city, yet none applied to my current situation. Out of nowhere, as I jogged along, believing my pursuers had abandoned the chase, I was looking off in the distance, trying to read the signs to my right, when most unexpectedly, a powerful arm, which I quickly learned that resistance was futile against, plucked me from the sidewalk as easily as snatching a child. Down into a darkened pit, it was much like a sewer system, but not as pungent, I was dragged by this unknown entity who had not yet identified themselves to me. I kept my mouth shut, not wanting to make things more eventful as they had already become. When I invariably was finished being dragged, I saw a towering figure hovering over me. He glared at me with disapprobation. It was the same look of disapproval that I remembered my mother giving me when I had done something really stupid and uncalled for. Initially, I was going to let you fend for yourself out there, until I realized that you're just arrogant enough to get yourself erased. The big voice swallowed around me, so naturally and smartly I yielded to the big man. I felt helpless as a newbie in a maximum security prison put in the same cell as a man named Bubba. Since I never got to know his name, I will call him Bubba. "Conceivably, you could live, but you're going to have to listen to me," the man said. "Apparently, you have no idea what's going on, which says to me you are a man of shortcuts without the patience to read the instructions or to be tutored in any sense of the word. We get your kind from time to time, and most of the time I watch them get picked up and tossed into the recycle bin. But today was your lucky day. Essentially, I did not have to save you from what was about to sweep you up like rubbish, yet I did. You would have been permanently erased and never able to return to wherever it is that you came from. I want to go back. Tell me, what do I need to do?" I pleaded with this enormous human being for my life. "You must become dirigible," Bubba instructed. "Okay, tell me what that is, and I'll gladly be that right now," I promised, unfamiliar with the word. "You must be able to be guided, steered like a ship, by something as small as a rudder. Can you do that?" I exclaimed gladly, "Yes, I can." "It'll be your pedagogue, and you'll do exactly what I say," Bubba said. I was made to lay still upon a table and was covered with a white sheet. Bubba said we were heading to the mainframe and I'd be plugged in and redirected back home. I could only take his word for it. Since the entire city was looking for me to be discarded, I had to put my trust in Bubba in hopes he knew what he was doing. Deep into the bowels of the city, I could feel the decline we were taking. with Bubba's every step rolling me along like a corpse beneath a mortuary table to who knows where. For all I knew, he could be taking me to an industrial furnace to be incinerated. I didn't hear a single soul as we were traveling along and didn't hear him speak or acknowledge anyone either. It seemed we were entirely alone, which gave me some confidence, but also made me nervous since I had only just met Bubba. I was putting my faith in this man and hoped there was no sordid dirty dealings going on. When we eventually reached our destination, we were in a cubicle surrounded by many others in cocoon-style pods. He sat me in a chair that resembled a dentist's chair. That in itself was intimidating. I cannot recall one pleasant moment of ever laying back in a dentist's chair. He hurriedly began to attach translucent cables and dangling wires to my head. "You're going into the trunk. This is going to hurt," he warned, then pushed the only red button on the console in front of me. The severest neuralgia of excruciating pain surged like a hot iron through my frontal lobe and into my cortex. I stiffened as a man executed in the electric chair. I prayed to dear God in heaven that he would take my spirit or knock me out cold, yet neither happened. I endured this prolonged torture for every bit of 15 to 20 seconds. In that time, I saw the darkest phantoms. These phantoms looked like small packets, and somehow I was being crammed inside of this ungodly demonic entity, wedged so tightly that I could not breathe. Within this pocket, in the hands of this dark, ominous figure, I saw myself being broken up into tiny pieces, floating in the ethereal world like particles of dust. I was being routed through a data network, and when I came to the end of the journey, which was not as painful as that red button Bubba pushed, I was reassembled again at destinations unknown. I'm unsure if I'd become pixelated in the process, but as of now, the retrieval process has not happened. As far as I can tell, I'm alive, but unsure as to whether what I experienced was serial processing or parallel processing, which leads me now to understand the importance of the bus I was to take. That's bus with two S's. These dust particles, as far as I can see, are numbers. I see ones and zeros. I'm unsure if I'm a memory or storage, but I am scattered in these minuscule particles, and this is my postcard to the real world, the world I'm from. I hope someone reads this, because I'm still here as bits of information, unlabeled, without a final destination. If I had legs, I would run like there's no tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed Run Like There's No Tomorrow by Dale Thompson, as performed by yours truly. And if you enjoyed that tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented featured author, you can help support him by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/Dale-Thompson. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/DALE-THOMPSON. Thanks again for your support of this program and tonight's featured author, as well as all of our authors who provided us with stories tonight. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you, personally, for joining me on this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference, and it would mean a lot to us. If you would like to hear a premium, extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes, featuring Twice the Terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 a month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyrie channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too. Just search for Otis Gyrie. Until next week, stay spooky. Get some sleep, if you can.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?